worldwide condemnation over the discovery of a mass grave of Ukrainian civilians believed to have been executed by invading Russian troops. Senator Coco Pimentel seeking a Senate probe into the huge unpaid estate tax debt of the Marcos family. Presidential candidates tackle corruption and political dynasties, among others, in the second Comelec-sponsored debate. Political science professor Dr. Julio Tihanki will help us analyze last night's event. And detained Senator Laila de Lima slams the head of the Bureau of Corrections for justifying the interview of convicted felon Jovito Palparan. We'll speak with the legal counsel of Senator de Lima, attorney Dino De Leon, later on in the program. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. The horrors of the Russian invasion coming to light. Ukrainian officials have discovered mass graves and dozens of bodies of civilians believed to be executed strewn across a town near Kyiv. Some appeared to have been bound by their hands and feet before being shot in the head. Witnesses say, and officials as well, say Russian troops killed nearly 300 civilians as they withdrew from the town of Bucha. Ukraine's foreign minister is calling it a deliberate massacre, while President Volodymyr Zelensky says Russian forces committed genocide.
They killed deliberately and with pleasure. I want all the leaders of the Russian Federation to see how their orders are being fulfilled. Such a fulfillment and joint responsibility. This is how the Russian state will now be perceived. This is your image. Your culture and human appearance perished together with the Ukrainian men and women to whom you came. I approved a decision to create a special mechanism of justice in Ukraine for the investigation and judicial examination of every crime of the occupiers of our state. This mechanism will help Ukraine and the world bring to concrete justice those who unleashed or in any way participated in this terrible war against the Ukrainian people and in crimes against our people.
The United States has said it is committed to pursue accountability. The United Kingdom and the European Union are calling for those responsible to be brought before the International Tribunal at The Hague. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres says he is deeply shocked by the images from Bucha and is now calling for an independent investigation to bring those responsible to justice. Russia denying allegations its forces carried out a massacre in Bucha. It describes the photos and videos from the town as a staged performance. Moscow now demanding a meeting of the UN Security Council Monday to tackle what it calls a blatant provocation by Ukrainian radicals. Amid the global outcry for the deaths, the U.S. is now weighing even stiffer penalties against Moscow. Germany's chancellor says Western allies will agree on further sanctions in the coming days. Berlin also urging the EU to discuss banning the importation of Russian gas, a departure from its prior resistance to an embargo. Ukraine also calling on the G7 nations to impose immediate devastating sanctions against Moscow. Meanwhile, Ukrainian forces have retaken the whole Kyiv region over the weekend as Russian troops appeared to shift their focus away from the capital and towards the south and the east. President Zelensky says Russia's goal is to seize the Donbas region and southern Ukraine. Since Russia announced they would scale down their military operations in Kyiv last week, its troops have gradually redeployed to Donbas. Meanwhile, the head of the Ukrainian peace delegation says the draft agreement that was discussed during the face-to-face peace talks in Turkey is now ready for discussion between Zelensky and Russian leader Vladimir Putin. Senator Coco Pimentel calling for a Senate probe into the Marcos family's 203 billion peso estate tax debt. Pimentel wants to know why the Bureau of Internal Revenue has not yet collected the gigantic debt from the family of presidential candidate Ferdinand Marcos Jr. In a resolution, Pimentel says there is a pressing need to look into the matter, as the money can be used to fund government's proposed subsidies for sectors affected by the rising prices of petroleum products in the country. Last week, Finance Secretary Carlos Dominguez confirmed that the BIR is trying to collect the debt payment from the Marcos family. Re-electionist Senator Richard Gordon supports the call for a Senate probe into the Marcos family's huge unpaid estate taxes. Gordon also addressed Senator Aimee Marcos's suspicions on the timing of the issue.
It's got nothing to do with timing. The BIR and the IRS of the United States exacts a tax on an individual, including Al Capone. That would be implemented. But here in this country, people take, you know, step on eggs when it's a big guy who's in awe, who's going to be taxed. It's important that this is a government of laws and not of men, and that the law be applied equally. If somebody is paying tax evasion or tax avoidance or whatever, it is up to the BIR, which is the arm of the government, to make sure that they collect the taxes properly and that they enforce it against those who don't pay taxes.
2022 presidential bets face off in the second debate sponsored by the Commission on Elections. 9 out of the 10 candidates participated to share their views on the current issues facing the country and to discuss their plans if they win the race for Malacañang. Among the key topics, corruption in government.
Dumadami yung mga nagnanakaw dahil walang nakukulong. Imposible na mabawasan yung magnanakaw kung wala namang nakukulong.
No, yung trapo at saka yung dinastiya, huwag natin payagang sumali sa eleksyon. Magnanakaw lang yan. Walang intensyon niya na paunlarin ang bayan.
Kahinaan hindi po sa sistema sa tao na nagpapatupad ng mga anti-graft and corrupt practices act. Yan po yung ating dapat supilin, ang dapat nating palakasin yung sistema ng pamamalakad.
Presidential candidates Lenny Robredo and Francisco Isko Moreno Domagoso, meanwhile, emphasized the need for reforms to curb corruption in the country. Moreno suggested using technology to lessen human discretion in government transactions. Robredo, on the other hand, vowed to issue an executive order on the matter on her first day in office.
Bigyan namin ng pagkakataon na makapagbayad ng buwis ang tao na wala siyang kinakausap na sino man. At siya'y nakapagbabayad ng matiwasay. At hindi na siya nagiging biktima ng mga pixer na pag-alagala sa mga ahensya o departamento ng gobyerno.
Ang pinakaunang executive order na gagawin ko pag ako nahalal ay yung full disclosure policy. Meaning to say, ire-require ko yung lahat ng government offices and instrumentalities to make public all their transactions, all the contracts, all the procurement, even without need of requests from anyone.
Survey frontrunner Ferdinand Marcos Jr. was again absent from Sunday's debate. He instead attended a meeting with several governors. Also a hot topic during Sunday's debate, political dynasties in the Philippines. Senator Manny Pacquiao sees nothing wrong with members of the same family gunning for various posts, saying it's the voters who decide to put them in office.
Unfair naman doon sa mga pamilya na nagserbisyo ng tapat, malaki ang nagawang pagbabago sa kanilang lugar at nagtumutulong sa taong bayan.
Senator Panfilo Lacson, however, had a different view.
Ayaw ko po ng political dynasty. Kailangan po talaga magkaroon tayo ng enabling law sa lalong madaling panahon para i-define kung ano yung degree ng relasyon ng mga ipagbabawal.
During Sunday's debate, the presidential candidates also disclosed their plans on how to protect undocumented Filipino migrant workers. Senators Lacson and Manny Pacquiao say current measures should be strengthened to ensure the welfare of Filipinos abroad.
Yung bagong batas na yung pagbubuo ng isang Department of Migrant Workers. Nandun po, ang problema doon, ang transition period dito hanggang 2023. So, maisuggest ko lang po na dapat i-accelerate na lang natin yung transition at maging proactive yung ating mga polo na magiging Migrant Workers Office, sila yung kukumpos nun.
Protektahan natin. Nandiyan naman po yung Department of Migrant Workers. And then yung ipinasa nating batas na OFW handbook. We will not allow ourselves to be bullied by other country.
But Vice President Lenny Robredo says beyond the existing measures, government should encourage overseas Filipino workers to register with the Philippine missions abroad so they can be protected.
Ang pinaka-problema talaga natin na despite the fact na meron tayong mga conventions na pinirmahan o treaties na pinirmahan patungkol sa proteksyon ng ating mga OFWs, marami talaga yung undocumented na hindi sila nasasaklaw ng proteksyon na binibigay doon sa mga documented. So kailangan talaga magkaroon tayo ng masusing programa para ma-incentivize yung mga undocumented na mag-appear sa ating mga embassies o sa mga ating mga consulates na ipaalam na nandun sila para kung magkaroon sila ng problema ay natutulungan natin sila.
Well, let's get analysis of the second COMELEC presidential debate. Now joining us is Dr. Julio Tihanqui. He's a professor of political science and international studies at De La Salle University. Professor, nice to see you again. Thanks for joining us today. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Casey. Good to see you again.
All right. So let's begin with how you would describe what happened last night. Your initial assessment of what transpired in the debates.
Yeah. So, the second presidential debate continued to probe into the candidate's vision and platform. No? This time on the issue of accountability, reforms, and the environment. No? And as expected, the front-running candidate has doubled down on his strategy of non-participation in the mainstream debates, no, and forums. No? I think by this time, we have already accepted the fact that he has opted for more friendly venues. No? So apparently, he refuses to appear in the so-called biased media unless it's biased for him. No? But you have to give credit for those candidates who have religiously appeared. No? And they really go through the grind of trying to explain their platforms. No? But, you know, it's also apparent that they have already reached the point in which they can no longer expound and just rely on their sound bites. No? So, Carmina, mukhang kinakapos na rin ng konti. No?
Yeah, which we're going to go to later on because I do want to probe deeper on that point that you just made up. But, of course, the debates that happened last night, you know, that didn't happen in a vacuum. This is happening right in the middle of campaign season with over a month to go before election day. So I want to ask you, with the recent developments on the campaign trail, you have numerous endorsements, you have a resignation that happened as well, you have the support gaining ground, you also have empty venues. Did you see that all these developments were either carried by the candidates with pride as they approached the podium last night and as they addressed the public? Or did you feel that this was, you know, some candidates were weighed down by recent developments on the campaign trail? Professor.
Yeah, it's apparent that the recent developments have also affected their performance in the debate. Like, for example, it seems that Vice President Lenny Robredo is a bit tired, no, and is not as enthusiastic as she was in the first debate. The same goes for most of them. No, most of them actually have one or two questions in which they have fumbled. No. And, you know, Senator Pacquiao apparently needs to brush up more on his foreign policy. And most of them have, you know, not really thought out their position on other political reforms, such as the party list system and the Political Party Development Act. Mm.
What about how Mayor Isko Moreno performed, and also Senator Panfilo Lacson with a resignation from Partido Reforma? Do you think that weighed him down in yesterday's performance?
Yeah, well, of course, in the past, most observers have actually credited Senator Lacson for his performance in the debate. No, and apparently, this time around, you know, he did credibly well, and he answered convincingly, but apparently he's also distracted. No? He's down to 2%, and given his recent acrimonious separation with his party, it might have damaged irreparably his candidacy. No? So at this point in time, I think Senator Ping Lacson has become an advocacy candidate, just like the other candidates in the debate. No? The non-contenders, who I believe are there simply to push for their advocacy. No? I think most of the candidates present in the debate were not really, they are not really expecting that they will be competitive in the final leg of the campaign. So now the attention is focused more on the more competitive candidates, such as Vice President Lenny Robredo and Mayor Isko Moreno. No? While Senator Pacquiao is still strong in Mindanao, if you look at his numbers, no, he has the softest voter support. No, and if you look deeper, no, they are the most likely to shift support. No? So I think it's still a competition between Vice President Lenny Robredo and Mayor Isko, because Mayor Isko is the consistent second choice in the credible surveys.
Which is very different from, you know, what had happened or what has been said the past couple of months before we reached this point. People were saying at that time that this should be a race between Lenny Robredo and Ping Lacson. But from what you saw in recent weeks, as you said a while ago, would Senator Panfilo Lacson still have a chance at this point? Or as you said a few minutes ago, that he has now become just an advocacy contender? There's no turning back.
In the previous months of the campaign, he has taken the high road, no? And until recently, apparently, he has decided to red tag, no? And then, it did not help, no? His advocacy, no? It will not help his 2%, no? And so his numbers have really gone down, no? From 6 instead of going out, up it went to 5. And now in the Lilo survey, I think he's number 2, no? So I don't see any pathway for him to become competitive in the last leg. No? Mm-hmm. In the case of VP Lenny, his campaign has gained traction. There's a groundswell of support, obviously, given the massive outpouring of support in his rallies. No? But the problem is how to convert, no, these numbers. No? It might be possible that these people who have already been part of her campaign is also part of the so-called bubble, no, in social media. No? Mm. But, you know, time might be running out on her campaign, but she needs to work really, really fast.
Let's talk about some of the topics, at least, that they delved into last night. Change in the system. I mean, all of them practically said that they want to change in the system one way or another, but I mean, we've heard this before, Professor Tihangi, right? Did anyone strike you, though? Did any of their statements strike you as, you know, something that can be done, that they will do, should they win?
I think the entire point of that first question with regard to weakness of individual character or weakness of the system is really to probe where they stand regarding their prognosis of age-old problems in the Philippines, no? Just like corruption, no, and it's really a test on how far they're willing to push reform and to question the system, no, and how are they contented with the status quo, no, and some of them have really, they have taken a position to question the system, and they've really said that the problem is with the structure. No? This is the classic structure agency question that we usually discuss in political science. Mm-hmm. No? And some of them have really taken a position that it is a problem of the system, the structure. And, you know, but there are those who have taken a more conservative position that there's no problem with the system, but rather it's people.
And but it's whatever like, it is, whether it's the people, I'm sorry, Professor, whatever it is, whether it's the people or the system, I mean, knowing the problem is one thing. Actually having a platform to address this is another story altogether. Yes. Did anyone present
anything? It's similar to medicine. No? If you don't have the correct prognosis, then you will probably have the wrong cure, right? So, you know, you must have... and that's the entire point of having a platform. No? And that's really to lay out how you view society and then what are your solutions to the illness of society. So if you have a, you know, if you start from a wrong premise, then you might have you might come up possibly with the wrong set of solutions.
So did you find their solutions lacking?
Well, yeah, actually, because none except for perhaps Kahalyod is really willing to push the envelope, no, to the furthest extreme. No, you know, some of them have actually pointed to a change of structure, no? And some have pointed to a change of both structure and people. No, but you know, it all boils down to incentives and how to shape people's behavior. So if you want to if you want to address corruption, you don't just say it's leadership by example. Because the biggest problem we've had is we've never had a strengthened anti-corruption single agency, unlike in Hong Kong or even in Singapore. No? Yeah. So, you know, based on your view of society, what is your solution? So if it's structured, then you come out with a solution just like strengthening your anti-corruption commission, right? Mm.
Professor, you know, one of the most pressing issues that the country faces today is the issue of climate change. And I was so glad to hear about that issue being discussed last night. But did they give us a clear understanding of what it is? I don't know. You tell me.
Well, yeah, I like V.P. Lenny's answer regarding the roadmap because, you know, we can address this global environmental crisis unless we know where we are. And we've been at it for quite some time, and we really need to take stock of where we are in terms of our climate change position. No? And then, of course, Kalyodi's answer regarding the role of big business and economic interest in all of this is also interesting, but none of them also, while most of them advocated renewable energy, none of them actually mentioned that one problem with renewable energy at this point is really the cost. No, it is still expensive. No, and the need to balance the need for consumption, energy consumption, cheaper energy consumption, and clean energy is also a big challenge. So I also like that most of them advocated research and development. I think it was Senator Lacson who did that.
Yeah, but whoever is going to win should hit the ground running when it comes to the issue of climate change. Did any of them present to you such a vision, such a platform that told you that they are thinking about this, even just as candidates, and that they already have a plan in place should they win to address this at the soonest possible time? Go ahead, Professor.
Right. Yeah, so I think it was Kyle Yodios being consistent with climate change, but he's not one of the major contenders. So I think it's going to be Vice President Lenny and even Mayor Isko Moreno with his advocacy of agri-industrial, I did not get the technical term he used, was I think a valid proposition, and even Senator Ping Lacson's advocacy.
So, because we're running out of time, we're just going to talk about the three C's discussed last night. There was the change in the system, climate change, and now we go on to corruption. Professor Tihanki, I mean, real talk, no one will ever say yay to corruption, right? Expectedly, all of them
of
said
course.
That,
of
you know,
course.
They're going to do something about it. But with what they said last night, what was actually doable? What can actually be realized should they win?
I found all their answers a bit watered down and not as bold as I expected or I wanted to be. Just like perhaps Calliope is the exception. No? So it's and one of them even mentioned that it is already part of the system. No? So I would have wanted more details, like what I've mentioned, the need to come out with a strengthened and single anti-corruption agency, or I might, if I were one of those asking the question during that debate, I would ask them who are the big businessmen funding your campaigns. Mm. So because the cost of election is also one of the major sources of corruption in this country.
Because there's always a quid pro quo somewhere.
Precisely, right. So, it wasn't discussed. So I would have wanted to hear more about that.
Professor, I mean, we're about a little over a month this week. It's going to be hitting a month before the elections. Did you think that the debate last night was enough to sway voters? Or at this point, everyone is set. There's no more undecided. Or should these candidates still expect that they're going to sway some votes to their end?
Well, yeah. Based on the 2016 exit poll, no, SWS, 54.2% decided only around this time, no, and a significant 18% decided on election day itself. So it is possible, no. But what's missing, no? We've had all these forums and debates already. But what's missing compared to 2016? I think what's missing is what is known as Duterte moment. No? If you recall in 2016, then candidate Duterte asked Grace Poe what she would do if the Philippines was attacked in the middle of the night, or when he claimed he would do the jet ski. No? Mm. So that was the Duterte moment that broke the election campaign to his favor, no, and it that led to groundswell of support a month and a half before the campaign, and up to now we still have not, seen that in the debates, no. So wala pang Duterte moment. So talagang kung mangyayari. Kung hindi, I think nandiyan na lang tayo.
And nandiyan na lang tayo meaning?
The front runner is sitting pretty, just waiting for election day to happen. No? So unless something drastic, no, some major earth-shaking event will happen between now and election day, no, time is running out, no, and he has a comfortable lead. So something must happen to move the needle in favor of those challenging the front runner.
Is that something pointing to a possible consolidation, and that if that is possible, this is the time to do it?
Yes, it's now or never. So I think those who are seriously thinking about the future of the country should take the lead of similar individuals in history. They must do a Doy Laurel or even a Mar Rojas at this point.
And knowing all these candidates, we've seen them, not just in the debates, but also in the way they, manage their campaigns and lead their campaigns. Right. Is there anyone there that would point to something like this happening, being the leader to make this happen?
Yeah. But of course, there's that thing called the prisoner's dilemma. Each one thinks that they will win on their own. But, hope springs eternal. I think one or two might be convinced to give way, hopefully.
Let's take the side of the voter now. If you're an undecided voter, was it enough last night to make you decide to go for whoever, with the performances that that was seen last night? Was it enough to sway an undecided voter's vote?
We still have to see the surveys, but my gut feel is that, you know, those who usually watch these debates, you know, are the supporters, no? But the candidates themselves must aim for the undecided or the so-called bandwagoners, no? Those who might be inclined to join whom they perceive to be leading in the campaign, no? So this is going to be what I call the battle of the bandwagons, no? And at this point, no, you have the leading candidate, the front runner, and the second candidate who is enjoying a groundswell of support, no? So the debates plus the actual campaign itself would determine who will win in the final leg of the campaign.
Okay, fearless forecast. Before we let you go, Professor Tihanki, what do you think is going to happen in the last month of the season before May 9?
So, endgame scenario, if nothing much happens, no, BBM will cruise to victory. History and time might be on his side. So in 3 out of 5 post-Marcos presidential elections, the frontrunner ends up winning. But the second candidate might be able to close the gap and eke out a victory from behind. And 2 out of the 5 presidential elections in the post-EDSA period, we've seen that with GMA in 2004 and MNRD in 2010. So anything can still happen in the last leg of the campaign.
But if you follow your thought process there, is it going to be 2016 all over again between Marcos and Robredo? And if so, can either afford that? Should the lead, if at all, if that happens, be so commanding that it cannot be questioned?
Yeah, so that's the bandwagon effect. If the lead cannot be cut down, no? And if the gap isn't closed, then if the front runner loses, no, that opens up the possibility of a contested election, no? So which is similar to what happened in the vice presidential race in 2016. So the gap must be convincing enough, the gap must be closed, and the number should be convincing enough for that election to be not questioned.
All right. Professor of Political Science and International Studies at De La Salle University, Dr. Julio Tihanki. Always a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for joining us today. Take care and keep safe.
Thank you, Casey.
All right. As the month-long overseas voting kicks off on April 10th, transparency advocates at the Right to Know Right Now Coalition are sounding the alarm over potential issues that may hound the voting process. The co-convener of the group, attorney Irene Aguila, says budget cuts for overseas voting could affect voter turnout, as a smaller budget will force OFWs to send their ballots back via post. She also raised concerns over the lower number of registered overseas voters and the international conflicts that may prevent them from voting.
In the short term, no, is really to give more budgetary support. I think we go back to that because it is still quite expensive to run any kind of exercise. Mm-hmm. The second thing also is to really have an aggressive campaign and encouraging our fellow Filipinos to, for those at least who are still registered, to exercise that right to vote. And this goes also hand in hand with streamlining the process of deactivating even in the country and registration.
Next on In Focus, we'll get an update on the presidential campaigns of Vice President Lenny Robredo and Manila Mayor Francisco Isko Moreno Domagoso. Will be joined by VP Robredo spokesperson Attorney Barry Gutierrez and Mayor Moreno's campaign manager Lito Banayo tomorrow, April 5. If you have any questions, do send them in to ANC Alerts on Twitter and ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Use the hashtag ANC In Focus. We're going to take a break now. Up ahead, several presidential bets weigh in on whether detained Senator Laila de Lima should be tried or freed. Details of that story and more when Dateline Philippines returns. Stay with us here on ANC. And we are back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. Worldwide condemnation over the discovery of mass graves of Ukrainian civilians believed to have been executed by invading Russian troops. Senator Coco Pimentel seeking a Senate probe into the huge unpaid estate tax debt of the Marcos family. Presidential candidates tackle corruption and political dynasties, among others, in the second COMELEC-sponsored debate. And detained Senator Laila De Lima slams the head of the Bureau of Corrections for justifying the interview of convicted felon Jovito Palparan. Back with more news. Religious group The Kingdom of Jesus Christ denies that the woman who entered into a plea agreement with the U.S. Justice Department in relation to the labor and sex trafficking allegations against its leader, Apollo Quiboloy, is one of their members. Lawyer Ferdinand Topacio is also confident the cooperation of Maria de Leon with the U.S. government will not affect the cases against Quiboloy. De Leon admitted she was involved in the processing of fake documents to allow members of the Kingdom of Jesus Christ to gain permanent residency and U.S. citizenship. Topacio says the office of De Leon was merely engaged as an independent contractor to process documents.
Yun pong pag-amin ni Maria De Leon, ayun po ay tinatawag dito po sa ating legal system. Hindi lamang po ito dito sa Pilipinas, kundi pati na rin po sa Amerika, na ang tawag po rito ay res inter alios acta, o ang ibig sabihin po ay acts of a third person. Sa madaling salita po, ito po ay ginawa ng isang tao na walang kaugnayan dito po sa Kingdom of Jesus Christ bilang parte ng kanyang trabaho.
More on Sunday's presidential debate. Manila Mayor Isko Moreno and Senator Manny Pacquiao vowed to let detained opposition senator and re-electionist Laila De Lima defend herself in court amid calls for her freedom.
Lahat ng uri ng pagtatanggol sa sarili dapat magamit to ni Senator Laila De Lima. And I guarantee you, Senator Laila De Lima, under my watch, she will have it.
Pabilisin yung trial para makalabas na siya kung wala siyang kasalanan. Kung may kasalanan siya, di mahatulan siya ng sentensya. Mahatulan siya. Yun po ang kailangan natin, due process, pabilisin.
But for Labor Leader Leody De Guzman, he believes De Lima should simply be freed.
Dapat palayain si Senator De Lima. Ang naganap sa kanyang pagpapakulong ay binggansya ni Duterte dahil sa kanyang ginawang pag-iimbestiga sa Davao. At yan ang isang katangian ng ating Pangulo ngayon, na pagka bumabati ko sa kanya, kanyang ipinakukulong o kaya naman ay kanyang titirahin.
Known as a vocal critic of the Duterte administration, De Lima was accused of running a drug trafficking ring with criminals inside the nation's biggest prison. While she was Justice Secretary, she has been detained since 2017. Well, last week, the Justice Department launched an investigation into the controversial live interview conducted by SMNI News with convicted felon Jovito Palparan. That interview of a convicted kidnapper was widely criticized. Among those who slammed the incident, detained Senator Laila De Lima. Joining us now is Senator De Lima's legal counsel and spokesperson, Attorney Dino De Leon. Attorney De Leon, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us today. Welcome to the program. First off, I want to get the senator's reaction to what was discussed in last night's debate. Leody De Guzman saying she simply should be freed, while the others said due process must be followed. What is the senator's take on this?
Well, the senator is happy that at least Leody recognized her plight, the fact that she is persecuted. She is constantly being attacked, and despite her innocence. So Senator Laila De Lima extends her thanks as well to those people who recognize that, in fact, she has to be given due process. You know, Carmina, if Senator Laila De Lima has been given due process, this shouldn't have reached this far. She has been incarcerated for the last 5 years. At least 7 judges have recused themselves from the proceedings. It's just too long for somebody to be unjustly incarcerated, especially if that particular person is innocent. In fact, let's remember that the United Nations Working Group on Arbitrary Detention has already stated categorically that after due investigation, what they saw was Senator Yael de Lima was arbitrarily incarcerated, ikinulong arbitrarily, just because she was doing her job as a senator.
You mentioned about continued attacks against the senator, and one such thing again happened during an SMNI interview with convicted felon Jovito Palparan. Let me ask you first, Attorney De Leon, should the interview have happened to begin with?
Well, we are quite surprised because we've had so many motions already on the part of Senator Laila De Lima, especially considering the fact that all of us have the right to be informed of the platform of candidates. But such was repeatedly denied by the court, even though Senator Laila De Lima is not convicted felon. However, in the case of Jovito Palparan, he is convicted. He was sentenced to reclusion perpetua, 20 to 40 years in prison. And yet, his interview was heavily subsidized by the state, no less than by Undersecretary Badoy. So why is it that Undersecretary Badoy and NDFL are so busy red-tagging the campaign of Vice President Teddy Robredo and everyone in the state, including Senator Laila De Lima? For us, perhaps it's a bit of a good news because they're so busy attacking VP Lenny Robredo, because we know for a fact that her campaign is gaining traction. And then all of a sudden, they're now attacking Senator Laila De Lima, and because we know for a fact that her campaign is gaining traction too.
The interview happened, and as you mentioned a while ago, a lot of people raised their eyebrows and really questioned why it happened in the first place. What do you think about how it upholds the fact that this interview happened, how it upholds or even undermines the rights of PDLs and detainees on both ends, attorney?
Well, to begin with, we have to understand the philosophy behind the criminal justice system. The reason why convicted criminals are actually in jail is because they have to be isolated from the rest of society, precisely because of all their moral misgivings and the crimes that they have committed. And then all of a sudden, we will see convicted felons taking the airwaves of the nation, and it is being subsidized by the state and being enabled by a government task force. So it's a bit bothering that what we are allowing such kinds of things from happening, which is very much against the very philosophy of our criminal justice system. Make no mistake, it is very clear that the claims being peddled by Badoy and Palparan in that interview are fairy tales. And in fact, Badoy and Palparan have zero credibility. As we know, the huge difference between Palparan and Senator Laila De Lima is that Palparan is convicted of a crime involving moral turpitude in 2018. In other words, he's still trying to blame Senator Laila De Lima for the fact of his conviction, but it was the Duterte administration who continued the prosecution, and he was convicted in 2018. So the circumstances are a little bit suspicious. The fact that it was the government of Duterte who actually prosecuted him, secured a conviction, and then right now they are blaming Laila De Lima. You know, this is very reminiscent of their ploy back in 2016 when they also tried to incarcerate Senator Laila De Lima or peddle the false charges against her, because they also use convicted felons. So the circumstances are suspect. This has been seen by the Filipino people before, and maybe the only difference is lumang tugtugin na yan, para bang lagi natin sinasabi, style bulok. Mm. Kasi ginawa na nga nila before, and then that's the same kind of style that they're doing right now using convicted criminals against Senator.
Attorney De Leon, the family and relatives of Karen Empeño and Sherilyn Cadapan, they call this a travesty of justice. How does the senator describe what just happened? What does she call this?
Definitely, it's a gross case of injustice. It's a gross disrespect towards the victims of General Jovito Palparan and all the other individuals who suffered from his cruel hands, as categorically found by the Supreme Court. It's also it also reeks of desperation on the part of Badoy, who's precisely because a lot of cases are already piling up against her, and her sins are catching up on her, which is why she's so desperate right now. It's in the case of Palparan, it also reeks of desperation because he is also a convicted felon. And of course, he's rotting in jail. So perhaps he's trying his best to actually secure the good graces of this administration to be able to strike a deal before Duterte goes down from office. So
but it's,
all
it's
of
not
these things,
but it's not just Undersecretary Lorraine Badoy, Attorney Dino. There's also Bucor Director General Gerald Bantag, who justified the interview because they wanted to air the expertise of Jovito Palparan. What does that tell you? And what should that tell the public?
There are so many experts on national security. Why is it that they have to bend the principles of our justice system? Why is it that they did not secure the approval of any competent court? And in this particular case, you know, does that mean that every time that there is a perceived expertise of a convicted felon, we will lend them there are airwaves and that will be subsidized to the state? Of course, ito ay palusot. Palusot lang. Kasi sinusubukan nila mag-orchestrate again on something na ginawa na nila ng 2016. Pero it looks like they are failing. So these are all acts of desperation. It is an attack towards our justice system. And malalang-malala na yung mga biktima man lang ng mga violent crimes ni Jovito Palparan ay hindi nila inisip kung anong maraming.
Attorney De Leon, the DOJ has already instructed Undersecretary Deo Marco to investigate. We did reach out to him before our airing today to ask him about the latest in the investigation, and he did say that they are waiting for the report. But to you, as you saw things happen, what are the glaring violations here?
What sa akin, syempre lagi ako sinasabi, let's give due process. And tama naman na mag-investiga sila, no? But the facts are very clear. What else has to be investigated upon? It is very clear that the Bureau of Corrections allowed this to happen. It is very clear that the interview is subsidized by the state. It is very clear that Jovito Palparan is convicted of a crime involving moral turpitude and has been sentenced to reclusion, to suffer the penalty of reclusion perpetua. So what else has to be investigated upon? Ang kailangan dito ay parusahan na yung kailangan managot. Kasi binayolate nila ang fundamental principles ng ating justice system, ng ating correctional system, and they are allowing a convicted felon to promulgate lies on national TV.
And no? This so, despite that there is a pending appeal before the Court of Appeal. So he was...
Yes, it doesn't cancel out the fact that he is a convicted felon. He is a convicted felon. There's already a conviction by a competent trial court. No? So malinaw na malinaw yung ebidensya doon. He was given a day in court, no? And he was allowed to actually offer all pieces of evidence to his defense. But regardless, the prosecution was able to secure a conviction. That means that they were able to show beyond reasonable doubt, beyond moral certainty, that indeed he is convicted of all the atrocities being accused of him. So why is it right now that all of a sudden he is being treated as a regular citizen?
As you mentioned, and then, I'm sorry to cut you there, Attorney De Leon, yes, because you're running out of time and we do have a couple of more questions to get in edgewise. Now, this interview happened upon the insistence of the NTF LCAC. Should Senator Laila De Lima win, what is her plan regarding the agency? Is she going to move to abolish? Is she going to move to defund the agency?
Definitely, Senator Laila De Lima would want to reassess the priorities of the NTF-ELTA. Senator Laila De Lima agrees that there has to be a whole of government approach in terms of ending the armed struggle. But that means that it is not through red tagging, it is not through violations of human rights, but rather Senator Laila De Lima fully understands why there is an armed struggle. It's precisely because a lot of our sectors of our society are being oppressed. Nakakalimutan sila, kaya nga sila nasa laylayan. And that's the reason why napitritan silang mabundok. So for Senator Laila De Lima, she will continue the whole of government approach, but she will in no way tolerate abuses against human rights and red tagging, especially considering that she used to be the chairperson of the Commission on Human Rights. So no yan, red line yan, and she will reassess. And if she finds out that the NTF will still constantly violate fundamental human rights, she will lead the charge in making sure that they are held into account.
What does the senator make of the flip-flopping of Vice President Lenny Robredo regarding the issue? First, she said she was going to abolish the NTF-LCAC, and then later on, clarified that to saying that she believes in the mandate and will pursue this, as you said, whole-of-nation approach. But people already at that time called her a flip-flopper. How does the senator justify that?
Senator Dilima doesn't see it as a flip-flop, precisely because Vice President Danny Robredo was very clear. She believes in the mandate, but it seems like the agency itself right now is structured in such a way that will not achieve its mandate. So perhaps it's time to abolish the NPF-ELCA and build something that is stronger, that has a whole-of-government approach, but will not be created in such a way that it appears like the priority is red-tagging of activists, of civil society leaders, of student leaders. No, that's the wrong approach. In fact, what's happening is it will be counterproductive instead of solving the problem of armed struggle, because people feel like they're again being pushed to the edge, so that they have no other recourse but to go to the boondocks.
Finally,
so it's not a flip flop. That's the status of the
LA. Finally, Attorney De Leon, let's go back to the Palparan interview. The senator, in a recent statement, also said that this may just be a prelude to a presidential pardon. How so? And how much of a possibility is this as we speak?
That is exactly the thought of the cap of Senator Laila De Lima and Senator Laila De Lima herself. Because we've seen this happen in the past. You know, they made a lot of deals when they asked convicted felons to testify against Senator Laila De Lima. In fact, one of the witnesses in the cases categorically stated that he is a drug lord, but no charges are being pressed by the Duterte administration. There seems to be a deal. So the question then becomes, why is it that all of a sudden their Palparan is being used by this administration, reminiscent of what they did in the past? What is the deal behind this? And what anong pinangahawakan ni Jovito Palparan at bakit siya biglang lumalabas? At sinisisi na naman si Senator Laila De Lima, kahit ang nag-convict sa kanya in 2018 is the Duterte administration. Mukha yata na merong silang pinangahawakan kay Jovito Palparan. Either it's a carrot or it's a stick. Is his safety at stake? We don't know exactly the motivations behind the actual General Palparan. But what is clear is these are all fairy tales. These are all lies. And the chain of events appears to be clear. He was convicted in 2018. Senator Laila De Lima was already incarcerated during that court.
We're going to have to leave it at that. Attorney Dino De Leon, Senator Laila De Lima spokesperson and legal counsel, we appreciate you taking our call today. Thank you. Take care. Keep safe.
Thank you, Carmina, and all our viewers.
And before we go, the Foo Fighters win all three Grammys they were nominated for just over a week after the American rock band's drummer Taylor Hawkins died unexpectedly. The band won for Best Rock Album, Best Rock Performance, and Best Rock Song. Other winners include Filipino-American singer Olivia Rodrigo, who scored the coveted Grammy for Best New Artist. Anderson .Paak and Bruno Mars won the Grammy for Song of the Year for their single Leave the Door Open. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.